Henda, you are now entering a space for black history. A voice for the voiceless. The Harbinger on the Line Revolution. A marriage of chillers and platform that will last longer than it girl's marriage. Welcome to Black Excellence. Do not fear, for if you do, just sip on some grandeur. And if you still do, ask ourselves, what would Mapapunzi do? Pagama chila, itlesha lefiki. Ungoyigi, even if when they ask you, how sabiin, do not fear. For if you do, just say, anistivi. This is the medicine of censorship. This is the pill. Which one is that one? Podcast and chill.
Ladies and gentlemen, yeah. It is an honor to introduce our first guest for 2023. Wow, really? Oh man, without a doubt. So this is like one of my favorite artists ever, of all time, bro. Oh. Like I got so much love for you, man. Like it's such an honor to be sitting next to you, man. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for the beautiful and talented Msaki! AKA, what's your AKA? Maskirena?
Oh, Msakirena. Msakirena was a girl.
That's it. What other AKAs do you have?
Say that again. Other AKAs do I have?
Yeah. It's Msakirena.
Samurai. Msakirena was a girl.
Yeah.
And then the rest are just like ridiculous mutations of that, mostly from, yeah, my horrible friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Son-in-law calls me Msakijena.
Msaki Jena.
All sorts of.
Jena.
I know. It's, that's the beginning of the end.
Yeah. And your full name is Asanda Lusasene Mvana.
That's what it is. Yeah.
So how did you end up with Msaki then?
Msaki is actually a nickname from childhood. And it followed me to school because of boarding school. Like I used to be called Nomsagazo, which was because I was just interested in people. And my parents would always have these interesting visitors. They were teachers and my dad became a lawyer. But they always had these interesting friends coming over. And at Gondom was in a black household. You don't go and follow the adults into the lounge. But I somehow used to get away with it, like straight from playing outside, full of mud. And I'd be like, who are you?
Yeah.
Where do you come from? What are you doing? You know, like just really interested in them. And then Nomsagazo is, you know, like radio Msagazo. Yeah. So they'd be like, oh, figures about Nomsagazo. You know, like, and also, you know, you don't, as a black child, you don't even look at adults like in the mouth or in the eyes.
Oh yes.
It was like, and I'm just like, you know, who is this person? I'm just always fascinated with people.
Yeah, that's so weird because I always thought like you reserved, very keep to yourself. You know, I'll pop because it sounds like no pop.
When I was a kid, well, I think I was a quiet kid, but I just really wanted to know who these people were and where they interfaced with my family, and that interest in people hasn't really waned, but definitely. I'm reserved, but I really love people. I spend all my energy on people, for sure.
We'll get into childhood a little later on, right? On my way here, I'm listening to music, man. Oh, my goodness. Saki's got hits for days, dog.
Ah, bro.
Fuck
you forget.
Me.
Like,
you.
When we play the Black Coffin, I'm like, oh, yeah, music is king. She's on it. Because she's got so many hits.
Yeah. And one of my favorite is, there's so many. Like, I think she's probably the only artist who's never done a bad song. Have you ever heard a bad song by Msaki?
As an artist, I think she probably does have.
I beg to differ.
You've just never heard them.
I beg to differ, yeah.
Because I fuck with the one you did with, what's his name? Focalistic, we're playing it now.
Yeah, I love it.
Dagababa.
Ah,
beautiful
song,
man.
Yeah,
I'm fucking with the one you did with Viska now, Zanzibar.
An absolute mystery to me. It's one of those things, it's like the gamble that you take when you go and make music with Kabza. His network of collaborators will send you to places that you haven't thought of. I've never met Viska. But because, you know, like, you leave the music there with the openness that it's going to land up in a collaboration that you may not have thought of. That's, because I love that song. I wrote it with Kabza. He's actually got, like, a really electro, more like Afro-tech approach to it.
Yeah.
In the first version we did.
Even Kusela has got, like, a bit of that touch.
So I'm keen to make my own version of it and just really lean into that Afro-tech because I think there's something interesting with that Afro-tech piano combination. But I like the one that's out as well.
So when you say you wrote it with Kabza, what do you mean? Like
so it was just me and Kabza.
He's part of the lyrics and stuff?
No, I wrote the lyrics, but I just and the melody and stuff, but I had basically just come back from Zanzibar. And I played him this Kora music from there. I played him Kora music from North Africa. I played him the song called Kothbiro. And Kabza's ear is so good that he just started channeling it and he found the sounds on the keyboard and we went straight into that mood, and that chord progression comes from there. And like, yeah, within an hour, that song was done because I had a fresh experience of being there, and it was just like me telling a story that just happened. Yeah.
Jesus, well, what's your favorite song? Like, out of all the songs you've done?
My favorite song? Ah, oh, guys, Njani. I think maybe one that keeps surprising me in terms of how it interfaces with people's lives would be a song like Ubuma Bumanga.
Oh, yeah. Yay.
Because we just had no clue, no Sanel at all, that it would have that kind of impact, and that, you know, the time that it came out in was also just like ironic and serendipitous. Like, we wouldn't have planned that. But Ubuma Bumanga would come out during the time when everybody was in lockdown, and life had essentially stopped, you know. Mm. And we finished that song just before lockdown, just before I went home, because I moved to the Eastern Cape again to be with my parents. And we had a different life now. You know, we had just left Joburg. And I actually finished, I think just because of the uncertainty, and I have small kids, and I didn't want to be away from my family.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be too far away from my family when we didn't know what this new thing meant, you know. Mm. In fact, I finished the chorus in Ngamaku. I recorded it like in the rural areas, in the lounge. I'd set up like, you know, a little sound card and my mic there. And when I left Joburg, we hadn't finished it. We didn't have a chorus. And we didn't even think the song was strong.
Yeah.
You know, and when I finished the chorus, I sent it back to Sanele, and it's his brother, Osandile, that said, don't sleep on the song, guys. Like, there's something here. Because we were just like, yeah, we need another session. You know, maybe we were just too nervous. But a part of that nervousness was that we knew we had something really special to say together, and we'd been avoiding a studio session for maybe a year, saying, okay, let's get together. But we just weren't getting it together. So that was the first one, yeah.
Jeez, man, I love that song. I still don't know what you're saying in that song. You know, well, I find myself singing along because, you know, it just sounds good, bro. But I have no idea what you're saying.
Yeah. I think that's the humbling part. Like, people's stories about how that song got them out of a rut or makes them see. Because I'm basically just saying that, you know, your gifts have not betrayed you. The things that have been placed inside of you will see the light, type of thing. And it's kind of like you know, the first thing is almost like I'm talking to like an old friend. I'm saying it was a long time ago when you still had Ezonjongo, which are, you had those visions for yourself, you know, come to this side of the bridge. And I'm just saying like that, you know, we grew up together. We used to dream in the heavens, looking at the sun. Wow. Let me just remind you that life has not stopped, essentially. And so people come back with these stories about how, you know, it pulled them out of dark places. And those are the things that you don't anticipate when you think that you're just, you know.
Where do like those kind of lyrics and that messaging come from? Like, were you imagining an old friend, Vele, or you just create them out of thin air?
Oh my gosh, you guys are going to make me... I believe that I'm writing one song. So I even, you know, if you examine the soul of that song, I don't think it's too far away from a song like Fetch Your Life. I think that I have, I think that I have like an underlying thread and something that... In retrospect, I'm trying to communicate, whether I'm aware of it in the moment or not. Because like I said, we were just, you know, kids in a music session, in a session that we thought our session was just going bad. But actually, when it links to the greater story of how, you know, both of us actually care to have a message, you know, Fetch Your Life is also saying, look, man, you know, it's really up to you to figure out why you're here, and the fact that you have dreams is not a mistake. Like, these are all clues about your existence and how you're meant to share love the easiest way on this earth. So those things can't be betrayed. They can't be put on the back burner just because circumstances don't allow. And so I feel like that's also a thread, and it's coming up in a lot of other songs of mine. Same song, you know? So I think my thread really is hope, even though I'm also meant to, like, to go away and lament and go to the painful parts. I really think that my real one song is just that, like, small song of hope, you know? Yeah.
Oh, man, you're turning me on right now, man. Sounding so sexy, man. Damn
it. Oh, my God.
You're right. Because of why?
Why do you switch him off?
You can't.
No, my man, it's nice to talk to someone.
I need the emergency button.
A female is not talking about champagne and fucking going to Dubai. You know what I mean?
Hey, dog.
It's talking about real shit, dog.
Yeah. Oh. Even One Shushu Day Artistry, it's which was your label. I don't know if it's still active.
Oh my gosh,
it's a similar thing. The story of One Shushu Day.
I guess okay. So I've been signed to myself since 2013, since the beginning of this for me, and my label and sort of creative entity was called One Shushu Day Artistry, which is a dream, a statement of hope. It's like something I used to apparently say as a kid. That like, oh, one should a day, I'm going to be a library. I'm going to be, a, you know, all the things that I was dreaming and manifesting for myself, I would, you know, they would be, you know, but the prefix would be that statement, one should a day. So my first label, and it still is like the mother company of all the things that I do, but now I'm working through an entity that I call Alt Black Continua. And that's more of a social economic enterprise that's just a space holder and an enabler for my, my community and myself and my friends, especially in the like alternative live music. You know, they are the most talented musicians in South Africa, but like one of the most under-supported. They're the ones that should be on tours. They're the ones behind all the mega stars, is like all the bands usually yeah. will have like those incredible artists. The artists that you know, there's probably one of these artists in their band as a musical director, or an instrumentalist.
Okay.
Those are the kind of unsung heroes of the industry. Most of them have studied music. They don't, and it's not that there's a lack of ability to actualize and to make music, but it's just that because they end up being classified as niche and alternative, it's difficult for them to get their music out because, you know, you have to kind of play in a mainstream platform to get the big funding, to get the record deals, to get the whatever. But it's just a way for me to sort of support that community that I come from and identify with as a folk musician.
So it kind of like reminds you of yourself.
It is myself.
Yeah.
But it's just like making sure they can record, they can tour and release music. And my,
is this
my
the community you're talking about? Is it Eastern Cape? Or
like? No, it's all over. Like we musicians are all over the place. And our big partner is Platoon. Platoon is our distributing partner, and Platoon is putting out MT's music, is putting out Aries, is putting out Zoe Mutiha. Lots of artists. Sanal musician is working with Platoon. So they're like, yeah, that's my business partner.
Oh, dope, man. Jeez. So like in your family, because your grandfather was a composer, right? So was your dad, right?
Well, yeah, my dad was definitely a composer. He just didn't get to live it out as an expression because he ended up working as a clerk and then as a teacher and then as a lawyer. So,
would you say you're the most talented out of your family?
Definitely not. I'm the least talented.
No way.
I'm not even joking. Like, my family is insane. Firstly, musically, I would say, but if I go home to umgidi or a wedding, I'm not the one with hlabelayo. I've got aunts that can bring it, that can sing, you know, sure. that are like, hey, you know, ingomizoqala, ingomayiqali bengekho. I'm just a supporting alto in the distance. and this will link back to why I really, performing is not, my voice is not an obvious voice to be a solo. Like, my voice is not an obvious voice to be isolated and to be heard alone, which is why, like, I just have a long journey with not even struggling, but just not understanding what I'm doing on stage in front of people.
Oh,
we'll get back to that.
Yeah.
But I think I'm more of a songwriter, but we'll talk about it. It's just my family, musically, there's a lot of people that are really good. There's music all over my family. But also my siblings are... I have an older sister. She's 4 years older than me.
Oh,
and I have a younger brother who's 2 years younger than me. We all grew up playing sport.
Yeah.
So also this music thing is like weird. Like nobody that grew up with me actually believes that I'm a musician because they always thought I'd either be a hockey player or a tennis player or a cricket player or something. Like I loved sport and that's what shaped me. I don't think I would even have had the tenacity to open my own record company and to back myself as an independent artist if I didn't have that discipline. And that ability to say, yeah, I can do it, you know, that comes from sport and that understanding of what it means to build a team and be part of a team. So yeah, my sister retired as like the number one squash player in the country. She's a musician. She's like a worship leader. She's an incredible singer. Like, if you think that I can sing, like, you need to hear my sister.
Wow.
How come you guys don't
jump in a song together?
I think it'll happen in its own time. Okay. Yeah. I think for me, it's just to encourage her to find her own voice and to like maybe release an EP because she plays great piano and she writes beautiful songs and her voice is sort of like one of those timeless Mariah Carey, Whitney Houston. That's kind of the era that she was a teenager. So it's like, it's very gentle, but also just like you can listen to it for years, you know?
So what are your parents saying in all of this when you start becoming big and you make it because they didn't?
No, man. With the parents, it's been a hectic journey because my first... when they first realized that I'm actually a creative, it was tough at home.
Yeah.
Like it was a tough couple of years because for them, all of their examples of people that were creatives or giving their life over to this artistic calling, there were no good examples. You know? I just had like, people that were within the reach of my family, uncles or extended family or friends, just were not able to have a proper life as an independent adult.
Oh yes.
And the minute I moved, my dad is an attorney. When I moved from studying law, which is what I did, when I first went to varsity, and I said, look, man, that year of having my own schedule open to me, being able to do my own thing, all of a sudden I realized I'm a freaking artist, I'm a freaking creative. And it started coming out things that I couldn't make sense of, like in my first year, in the freshers' concert, somebody, one of the hakas or the seniors, overheard me singing to myself in the bathroom. Next thing, she's like, girl, you got to represent our house at the freshers concert. And I'm like, hell to the no. Am I singing in front of people? What are you saying to me? And she almost like threatened/punished me into singing in that concert. Because like, that's the kind of power, you know, when you're a first year and they're busy grilling you and you're doing all those things. So like I had this ultimatum where I could save my dorm from being punished, or I could sign up for this thing. Yeah. And I was like, oh, guys, not everybody's going to think I'm, you know, letting the team down if I don't go. And I ended up singing at this first year's concert. And then I get spotted by the university jazz band. And next thing, I'm a vocalist in the university jazz band with like the brass section. And we're playing gigs in town. And this year just showed me that like I'm actually a creative. And the other thing that happened is that I started, like, I remember decorating for one of the dancers at school. Like, I was really into visual art as well. I like drawing, but it's just something that I suppressed in high school because I just thought being more serious in academic was it, you know? And I just had like a tough time in high school trying to find myself, you know? But first year, everything just made sense. I was like, oh, okay, it seems like this is an outpouring of who I am. And I know that I'm pursuing law. And I'm doing it from a place of like, I've been given a good education and I have guidance and I have support. And my dad used to call me almost like at the end of each week and be like, how are your classes? How's law of persons? Are you enjoying contract law? How's this? Mm-hmm. And I had someone to, and it made us closer. So when I said I'm deviating, it was like, I can't help you. I don't know how to help you. And why are you going to no man's land where you're going to end up poor? And my parents kind of mised me, you know, when I said I'm making this change.
Even your mother?
Yeah, they didn't get it. Sure. And I think they were maybe trying to scare me back into making the proper decision, which is one that's a bit sure. But I went and I studied art and design as a way to start saying yes to my creativity. And then from there, it's a long story, but I went from there to studying graphic design. And then my parents were like, okay, it seems like you're really sticking out with this thing, because I even got myself a job as a graphic designer. Mm. But it was a really tough journey because I was also at school on a hockey scholarship. And when my parents started not feeling the change in career, I had to pay for my own fees. I had to figure out everything. And
how those, are you doing those, that? Like, are those you scholarships? Doing like these... small jobs. How you pay?
I worked at Spur. Yo, double shift at Spur on a weekend.
No way.
Imagine Sagi singing happy birthday for your Spur.
No, yeah, I used to sing happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Today is the day that you have horrible.
Yeah.
And it was a weird environment because, like, I remember fighting with the manager because one dip panza. It was upanza. So upanza is when they smack you on the bum. And they're like, oh, it's the Spur way of doing things.
No way.
And I used to get, they were like, all the girls were getting smacked on the bum. And I was like,
you can't
be here spanking me. And then I got the worst bay. And that weekend I made no money. And I remember being like, this is not the life. But a double shift on the weekend, still having to maintain like a hockey scholarship meant I had to play provincial hockey. I had to play for my first team. I had to somehow have time to do my drawings because I'm now studying art and design. And I burnt out, you know.
Sure.
And I did go home and eventually like studied at an art and design school that was closer. And then I got a job as a designer. And then my parents saw this struggle and this like determination to be this artist thing. And then they were like, look, go study this thing at a university. Don't embarrass us. And they sent me to Rhodes. Mm. And that was where I met more musicians. And then the music started coming out more as I explored that degree. I went to go study at Leeds University. I started a jazz band there. And then when I came back, I was ready to be a musician.
When did you go to the USA?
That's kind of after I was done with my, you know, it was just like a... That wasn't a long stint. It was just like this beautiful school that had put out a call where they were trying to incubate creatives from all over the world from different mediums. So I think like 900 people applied. They took 30 of us from all over the world. And it was just a weird art school in the woods of North Carolina, like the most random, another group of artists facilitating young artists coming into their own. So yeah, it was like not even that long, but for the first 2 months, they just tell you to put down your tools. And it's like a place of encouragement and learning more about your craft. And I think that's when I decided that I wanted to pursue this you know, this life of, you know, trying to spread good messages through music and art. I think that's where it all fell into place for me.
And then what was the name of the rock band that you started with?
Oh, my God.
Hey, was it 2008, ne? Yeah, she was a rock band, dog.
Jeez.
Wild.
Yeah. These are the decisions that... This is what happens when you're in a small town. You know? Because this is me living in East London. This is when I was studying graphic design and trying to study art. The rock band was called The Patience.
The Patience, okay.
And it was a collective.
It's not a bad name.
It was quite cool. We thought we were cool. We were really lame. but there's a friend of mine, Vinny Mack. He's actually in Joburg now. We've been writing together for 10 years. Dope. And he was in that band. And we played with another guy called Rigby Torrente. There was a bit of hip-hop here and there as well. It was just like this amalgamation of things. But it was The Patience, as in like... the sick people,
yeah,
and then the patients as the virtue.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we thought we were so smart.
Love it.
We thought we were so clever.
Yeah. But it never made it anywhere, ne?
No.
Oh, man.
Patients died.
No. We flatlined.
So take me to 2013. What's happening then? What's going on at that time? Because this is when you like start doing this music thing seriously, ne?
2013 is when I end up being booked to... play a corporate at the ICC, and it is organized by BMF. Do you know Black Management Forum?
Yeah, I know them.
It's organized by BMF, and one of the their partners or stakeholders is, how do I forget this? Because they literally gave me like $100K to do my first EP. I think it's the IDZ. It'll come back to me. But they run into me at this corporate and they're like, what are you doing with your life? Like, I just did a set, like a really short set, 3 songs, in their corporate program. And I said, well, I'm recording this EP and I want to get it out. And I had already had like a spreadsheet with the costs, what my launch would cost at the Guild Theatre in East London and IDC. They flew me up to Joburg and they gave me this sort of non-discretionary fund. And I funded my first EP, paid the musicians for the sessions and printed like... thousands of copies of this little EP that I designed. And so 2013, I just started sharing, moving around different cities and basically selling this EP from the boot, trying to gather...
From the boot?
From a boot, like boot, whoa. You know, 60 wow. rand. I remember this one weekend. Monty, there's this place called Ebhlad. It's just like a bula boot type of situation where you just park, drink, and they braai. And I went to each car that was there drinking, having a party, trying to give them this EP saying, look, this is who I am. This is my music. And just starting on the ground, trying to just get people to know about you, you know. And I think those years just trying to figure out what it's like to put together a live audience and to say I have these songs. And just figuring out what it's like to be a live performer. Those are the things that I think have carried me.
So at this moment, what's the sound like? Is it still rock?
The sound is folk. I'm a folk musician. I'm playing... guitar and singing. So the songs have got like a little, you know, a little bit of a few violins, mostly guitar and voice, you know, some percussion here and there, a cellist, an oboe player. It's like really random, but it's a sweet little acoustic EP.
Yeah.
Very indie Afro folk. That's what I called my sound at the time. Indie Afro folk.
Wasn't there SoundCloud? What did you just put on SoundCloud?
Yeah, it was on SoundCloud. I put it on SoundCloud. That helps a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Shit, man, that's wild. And where would you be playing like during this time? Like,
really, really weird barns, strange, small acoustic shows. I was also part of the scene in East London. Like, there were poetry circles. This is where I met Barita. This is where I met Spinach.
Zahara.
Zahara.
Yeah.
Yes, she was Spinach. I got to pick
up this day. Spinach.
This is where Barita and I were laughing about it the other day. We literally were like, oh my God, do you remember those shows at WSU? The university also organized shows. The African Hebrew community also organized shows. I was part of a group that organized shows at a place called Township Times. It was just really sweet, you know, because I'd come back from studying art and I was home to be intentionally showing my parents that, man, look, I know I told you guys I want to be a musician.
Yeah.
My fine art and my, you know, just opening that door to creativity has led me to this place where I know I have all of these songs. Because I just started writing songs, you know. I would see the pictures first, the things that I was painting and the photographs I was taking and all the, you know, stuff that I was making with the visual art. And I would sometimes literally just describe what I was seeing and I would have a song. And I remember struggling when I was studying at Rhodes because I was telling them that, guys, this music is coming really strong and fast. What do I do with it? You are, this degree is feeling a little bit too purist because you're not making space for me to just like have this multidisciplinary expression. Like there's songs here, there's, and they were just like, are you a painter? Are you a sculptor? Are you? And I was like, oh, this place is really frustrating. And this is after coming from Leeds University where we're putting on exhibitions, we're putting on happenings. There was like a freedom in terms of expressing that postmodern way of seeing art in a fragmented, multidisciplinary way. And the frustrating part is that at Rhodes, they're teaching us that people are making this kind of stuff that's exciting, but they're asking us to be sort of old school and to choose, you know, one way to express. So, yeah, that's kind of where the music came from.
But you can't do that with creatives. You can't put one blanket over creatives. Yeah, and box them, you know what I mean? It sounds like they were doing that.
But I think that happens in all education, you know, not just... Sometimes people want to teach you in a way that makes sense, that they can compartmentalize. I don't think it's malicious, but, you know, looking back at it, it's just like not forward-thinking. It's not really insightful. It's not an insightful way to teach.
So would you go back and go to Rhodes or like, would you...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it depends what I would, what I'd be going to do there. I'm interested in maybe doing a postgrad in writing.
Oh, yeah?
But I'm not interested in a... Yeah, it would have to be really open in terms of the way that we would express it, multidisciplinary way. I would want to, if I did a writing thesis there, I'd want to be able to sing my last recital.
Okay.
You know, because songwriting and poetry is the same thing, you know, for me. And actually, when I look back, when I was a kid in primary school, the first time that that maybe I was given a clue that this could be my life in the future, I was always getting these like writing awards and these poetry awards, and that thing really made me feel, you know, like a person that had a voice. But I didn't really, I kind of missed it my whole life until much later.
Would you say your music has got like udlozi, like it's got like, it's very spiritual, man, very deep?
I think because I kind of prescribe to many different worldviews, and that is a strong one, African spirituality, I don't think that the connection and the conversation between myself and my ancestors is not happening. I think it's happening all the time.
Okay.
And it forms part of my intuition in general.
Yeah.
And obviously music is a way that I express myself, so it's affected by that.
Mm.
One instance that I think is very clear in my life that there is an intentional communication is that I never met my grandfather, but my grandfather was a person who wrote in a really... choral style. He was a choral musician and he was a choral composer.
What's that?
Choir is dimming the sound.
Oh, okay, yes.
So
yes,
all of
yes.
those different harmonies,
composing
for choir, composing for groups. And it being all of that whole vibe, a Transkei, because of the interface with the missionaries, right? In the Transkei, former Transkei, people were singing in that four-part harmony that comes with like the John Wesley church tradition. So it's, but obviously making it the same way that churches now, you know, that we now reinterpret hymns.
Yeah.
All of those melodies are old, you know, they're old kind of English, Presbyterian, Anglican, Methodist melodies, but we've given them a vibe, you know. So my grandfather was also used to be asked by leaders or chiefs if there was a visitor coming to compose something, write something to welcome them. And there's been instances in my life where I've been commissioned to do things like that, you know, write special songs for occasions. And I remember the first day there's a song that I dreamt called Imfama Ziyabona. This was my very first song that I emailed to Metro FM, to Gwiba, and said, hey, I have this song, still from East London, 2013, that same, like maybe just before. Yeah, it was before 2013, sorry. That song, I didn't write it. I woke up at 3:30, and it was just a... It just arrived in four-part harmony. I could hear it. It was like, I heard that. It woke me up. And I had this tiny little Sony Ericsson phone that looked like a Game Boy. It had a recorder on it. I just literally... opened my eyes, recorded those parts, put it down, went back to bed. Had a chat to my dad in the morning, being like, hey man, something strange happened to me. I just, and I sing it to him. He's like, that's interesting, you know. And he alludes to the fact that it's a stimuli. And then he casually just says, your grandfather wrote like that. And then he walks out the kitchen.
Wow.
And I'm just like, and I now really, really have accepted it as it was the first communication and as a gift, as a, you know, like a ready-made song. Because I went and I figured it out on guitar, wrote more verses to it. But I've actually had a few more songs where I've collaborated with my grandfather's music. Because I found more songs that he had made through the SABC archives. I found a vinyl in my dad's collection of music that had been recorded by choirs at competitions. And yeah, we have a song together called Dirap that I put out on my last album.
This is wild. Are you even human, bro?
No, I mean, this is a bit crazy. But
it is, man.
It's yeah.
Because normally when you have a dream, I hardly remember any of my dreams, bro. Yeah, so for you to remember a whole song, it's wild.
It started happening then, and it's happened quite a few times since then. So I think there's definitely a gift that's being carried on. And I mean, it's not that deep. It's also like just genes. You know, my dad had the same gift of composing. He expresses it in a different way because he had to, you know, he was growing up under different times. He had to be a teacher and he had to work and he had to be a clerk to take himself to university. Couldn't just become a musician. And this is the privilege that we've been afforded. Like, we're standing on the shoulders of giants. There's a whole talent that is generational that I get to express that is now, you know, supporting my family, supporting other communities.
Yeah.
And will give to my kids so that they can do whatever they want. If they have, if there's a passion they need to follow, they can do that because I've been able to self-actualize through music, a gift that is in my family.
Oh.
So there's something magical about that. And I don't think the ancestors are that mystical. It's just like, it's a genetic, beautiful expression and a continuation of something that is a gift in a family. You know, the same way that a family will have a family of healers or pastors. I come from a family of musicians.
Where's the craziest place a song has come into your head or something? Like maybe one day you're making love to your husband and then you gotta stop because the song is coming. Not him, the song. There's gotta be a weird place kitchen. Where the song came, right?
The kitchen, washing the kitchen. Dishes. Yeah, like just mundane places. Just doing normal things, chores, you know, just getting on with normal daily activities like washing the dishes.
Yeah.
That's a song. Anytime that I give way to silence, I probably will hear a song. I don't think, like I always, my friends that come over to my house will always say like, why is your place so quiet?
Yeah.
And I really think that, you know, if I learn how to quiet myself, which I'm still trying to because I've got this monkey mind, I've got a very busy mind,
yeah,
got a lot of energy. But anytime I manage to keep quiet for long enough, I will probably hear a song.
Yeah.
Is that why you call yourself song catcher? Like you catch it in the silence.
I just caught it in the silence. This is why I don't even feel like I write these songs, you know. I honestly think that I shut up for long enough to just stick my aerial up and raise the antenna. And if I catch something, then there is a part of me that is responsible to shaping it. And this is where the songwriter element comes in. I have to train my songwriter. I have to train my musician. I have to learn about how to make the song better. But catching the song has got nothing to do with being a good musician.
Mm.
It's literally got everything to do with my ability to shut up.
Mm.
And also my ability to calm the noise inside myself.
Huh.
Which is why I'm taking a hiatus. But it's literally just like, if it's too noisy, I can't do what I'm here to do because then andiva.
Mm.
And it's not even about being quiet. You can be quiet, but your internal world is so noisy that you can't hear anything, you know?
Mm.
And so the rituals and the kind of like, you know, my life to try and keep myself a quiet vessel that can catch songs has got absolutely nothing to do with practicing and becoming a better musician. But there is a responsibility to make sure that I'm learning, you know, about composition and learning about how to think differently about, you know, you do practice the muscle and then it's a collaboration between the song catcher and the songwriter. Does that make sense?
100%. Yeah. So now, normally some people who write will have a writer's block. What happens when you, maybe for 2 weeks now, you're putting up your antennas and nothing comes through?
I love, this is hectic because this is probably one of my favorite things to think about, like just creativity in general. And I think that writer's block doesn't have one answer. I try different things. Like if I'm struggling to just be inspired and songs are not pouring out of me, then I do something practical. Then I use the other side of my brain. I activate my left brain. I'm learning a scale. I'm listening to other music and I'm looking at building blocks of something else because you need to keep moving. Writer's block only becomes writer's block and stays and keeps you stagnant if you succumb to it. If you're like, oh, I'm bad, I don't know. Then the waters start getting murky. And so I don't think this is an answer for everyone, but sometimes if like the right brain, which is the more intuitive and the one that is just more flowing, is struggling, do something practical. And then if the practical thing might give you more tools to address, then you might write a different way. Or go and be interested in another form of art. If I'm struggling to write songs, I go to 7 exhibitions.
Jeez.
If I'm struggling to, and I've never stayed in that place for long enough. There's usually an answer that comes really quickly. If I'm struggling to write songs, maybe there's too much chaos in my life.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there's something I'm not dealing with in my personal life that is making it difficult for me to be, you know, a proper vessel or a proper aerial, you know? Or maybe I'm too tired. Maybe I'm on the road too much and I'm like not really... There's just all of those things to consider. And I think it's different things with different people, you know?
So which one would you say was your first big hit? Because I was first got introduced to you by that song with Moby Dixon, Love Color Spin.
Love Color Spin.
That's the first time I heard you.
That song changed my life. I wasn't planning on being a house vocalist.
Yeah.
You know? I wouldn't even call myself a house vocalist, but I have such an affinity for electronic music. Now,
dance,
I've really gotten into it in a way that that is genuine. Like, I really want to carry on pursuing my writing in that space.
Because I know you didn't want to do the song with Moby Dixon.
No, I didn't. I was like, no, I'm busy. You know, I think I had like a show at a little theater, the Arts Theater in East London. It was around the time I was hustling. And trying to show my parents, actually, this is why I started at home, because I could have just gone to Joburg.
Yeah, sure, sure.
I'm going to be a musician, bye. You know. But because we had just had the scare of like, I don't even want to call it a scare, but it was just like this mistrust of the industry because of things that were happening to people like Zahara and other stories that you were hearing.
Oh.
My parents were just like, yo, can you not just do something else, you know? But I tried to be at home, to have these shows, to organize this thing so they could see that it's not that scary. It's not this life of being a musician or an artist is actually, it can be dignified and it's not that bad, you know? And so staying close to home, I was trying to win them over still into my world, you know? And it worked. They started coming to my shows. They started seeing that I could have a future, you know? And part of that was also those small shows at the Arts Theatre. That was like a small little venue that took us seriously, gave us good sound, started allowing us to be more theatrical. You could go with a band. You'd be able to make some money at the door. And Moby started following me when I was putting on these shows in East London. And he came.
So he's from that side as well?
Yeah, he's from East London. Went to the same high school.
Oh, dope.
Yeah, he was Mabintuli in high school.
Mabintuli.
Really like... such an interesting character, like super reserved, but also like really sure of himself.
Yeah,
it was always been a sweetheart. And I remember him coming to my shows and being like, the girl, when are you coming to studio? And I'm like, for what? And this one day, after that show at the Arts Theatre, he convinced me to go to his studio, which was like 15 minutes outside of town. And I literally had no time for it. I did one take. I was just like, listen, I'm trying to go home. You know, I don't want my parents to think I'm out here twerking. I'm trying to go home now. And I just whipped out like a draft in my little tilili, you know, those phones that have 20 messages.
Yeah.
I'd been writing something in the draft and I just whipped it out, freestyled this thing.
Wow.
Left it there. It hardly sounded like anything to me. Like, I think I did like one take, did a take of ad-libs, take of harmonies. And I was
peace.
30 minutes, I was gone. And Moby, you know, testament to him and his production skills, put together this beautiful song, you know. And I was just like,
whoa,
there's something here, you know. And this song is the reason why Black Coffee hit me up. It's the reason why the Revolution Brothers actually hit me up first. I did a song with them next. That was my next house song with them. So Moby really did. I still perform that song in all my live. And my live shows song. And people go insane.
It was massive when that song came out. Everybody was like, who's this? You know what I mean? And how was it like working with Coffee?
Man, that
is a legend.
For me, that is also a profound part of my journey because I met somebody who was equally obsessed with like the creative process. And I think between us, we probably sent that song "Wish You Were Here" to each other 31 times.
Jeez.
And I also learned something about energy and creativity where, you know, he would have just come off a show somewhere in LA or Ibiza or in Tulum. And you will use that energy from stage to go and produce a little bit and get the song a bit further. I'd get updates at like 3 a.m. in the morning, 2:30. And probably next to Diplo, one of my favorite creative collaborations.
Wow.
He's up there with, like, Sanel has become someone that I really love working with. But my first two interactions, you know, my first interaction with Lando Butinati was just that, like, he's really committed to finding the soul of the song.
Oh.
And it wasn't even a matter of, maybe our 10th version could have sounded good and it was good enough to release. Maybe even the second one.
Yeah, but he just wasn't,
he was just like, this can be better. And I remember the first 10 versions, the chorus was heavy. I had a lot of words in it.
Oh.
And he just kept saying, it's missing something. And he knew that it was more like taking away what was there.
Mm.
And he would update the beat, the bass line, and change something in the drums. And he would send me an update. He's like, this is how it feels now. And I would feel something else. I would change something else because the conversation was just this ebb and flow. And the song grew really organically. But we knew that it wasn't done. And so we did sessions over, like, I did the first session in Hamburg. Then I worked in it again in Berlin. I was, like, on this, like, Euro tour with my band. And I kept improving it here and there. And then the very last session I did was at Solistic in Joburg.
Mm.
And that's when I realized that, oh, the chorus needs to go away. I need to just break it down to one line. And he also alluded to that. He's like, maybe the chorus just needs to be, I wish you were here.
Eesh.
It had a whole thing like that we didn't need that was making the song heavy. And we only arrived to that on the last session. So testament to his, like, just, you know, the tenacity to go after the soul of the song. And I cherish that experience because it taught me a lot.
Jeez, yeah. That's wild, man. Have you heard that song, Penduka?
Yeah, no. Wish then you hum with the trumpets.
Yeah.
You play that song like massively, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First time I heard that song, I'm like, what is this?
Bro.
That's Robin Fussy Cock playing the trumpet. He was in my band, he was on tour with me, and he recorded that part in Hamburg. He completely made that up. And that also formed part of the creative process. And if he wasn't open to that, I was like, okay, I'm taking my whole band to studio. You know, and he was just cool with stuff like that because he's actually a musician.
Yeah.
So he gets it, you know.
And how's your paperwork, man? Like, are you getting your royalties, all that stuff? Or have you been screwed? You know, we're always hearing like, yeah, artists are getting screwed and whatnot.
Yeah, I think I've been lucky just to take my time with all of this. And I think having that sense of independence from the early onset of my career, I haven't really had issues with stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, we're able to have those conversations.
Would you say studying law helped all the bits that before dropping out?
I loved it.
And your dad is a lawyer also.
No, I loved it. No, I mean, the thing is, you also pick your battles. You know what to push for in the right time. And I think that wisdom comes, you know, I'm not saying that I've never been screwed over, but I think being able to always have a handle on the paperwork and understanding what concession you're making. And, you know, if you're saying, look, I'm going to live with that clause, or I'm giving that up so that I can have that. You know, I'm also just like, I love the fact that I'm independent, and I think it's important for me and my journey. But I don't think that, you know, I have an openness to look at every possibility. And I've just unfortunately never had a record company give me any kind of offer that made sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've entertained all of the conversations, and I've just walked away saying I'm better off with my small pie and having all of my small
100%.
Pie. So it's made me really open to looking at different deals. I understand why people sign 360s. I understand why people make certain concessions on certain contracts. And I think having that insight from the beginning has been able to, you're like, okay, that artist is big. They're throwing their weight around in a certain way. I understand why they think they can do that.
Yeah.
If I'm letting them get away with that, it's because I'm getting that in the publishing. You know, there's ways to play it, and you just need to know what it is that you're looking at.
How much money have you made till now?
McChee. Does he really think I'm going to answer a question like that?
I tried to book at my birthday party last year. And then I got the invoice. I'm like, hey, Msaki's making money. Oh.
Hey, man, there's people paying this.
Yeah, of course. I couldn't afford it.
She's always on the road.
Because I really wanted you on my birthday. I think you weren't available, I think. I think you're out of the country, I think. Yeah.
But live music, unfortunately, isn't
it's not cheap.
The place. Isn't the place to make the real money. Mm. I think for me, songwriting is where I'm able to build into these different revenue streams. Even
so
if I want to.
Gigging
is the lowest form of income for me.
Jeez,
yeah.
That's wild, eh? Because normally it's the other way around.
Songwriting. I mean, the thing is, if I could only just write songs and compose, I wouldn't be unfulfilled.
Mm.
And that's my first love. And I work a lot, like in film. I write stuff for, you know, all these Netflix specials. I do a lot of like music for picture. I do a lot of music for adverts. That's kind of like, I love a brief. And I think this is from my graphic design background. I love restrictions within creativity. You give me a brief, I'm thriving within those parameters. You know, so like being told to write a song because this is the outcome and this is the vibe, this is the direction creatively, this is what we want as a response commercially. I love that kind of stuff because I studied, you know, I essentially studied art direction and graphic design and a more commercial way of directing your creative process.
What are some of the big songs that like you did that we're not aware they by you, be it for another artist or as you say, like Netflix or pictures?
I mean, I've written a lot for like artists like Kelly, Ladies of Mar. And I've done a few, some ghostwriting for the hip hop boys.
No way!
I will die before I tell you.
come on.
Guys, it's an interesting.
Are you writing the raps or like the melody or what?
Different things.
Jeez.
And there's some where I get to like be on the outside, and I'm doing some work at Stogie T now, where I can name myself.
You've been writing for Stogie.
Not for, please, guys.
That's freestyle one of my Fridays.
That's one of my favorites. No.
I'm fucking with you.
Stogie, I love Stogie so much. I got to actually work with him in LA on his new project.
Yeah.
And I'm not writing for him. Writing with... choruses and stuff like that. But I love that. That's also like, I wish I could do more. I feel like the hip-hop boys are sleeping. Sleeping. But it's fine. Like, doing some work
with Blackie. Who do you like?
I like Blackie.
Blackie's good.
I have time for Blackie. I have a lot of time for Blackie, just as a creative, I think. And just, you know, as a person, he's a great guy. Loves music.
So, you're from a small town. You sound and look like a purist. You're just doing this for the pure love.
A purist?
Right? Am I lying, Pinduk?
Yeah,
she's a purist. Yeah. You're not here for the fame or the money, right? It's like a calling, right?
Or the celebrity culture.
Yeah.
Yo, guys.
So when you come here...
troubling me, bro.
When you come here and Love Color Spin becomes big, now you're working with Black Coffee, Black Motion, all these guys. How does the celebrity thing, how do you adjust to that?
I don't think I've ever adjusted to that thing, hey. Because it really... if I can describe... myself, it's like, if you can think of a devotee, I'm a devotee to the craft.
Yeah.
The byproduct of this thing has now gotten me people interested in my personal life.
Yeah.
That shit is mind-blowing. And I understand there's a part of it where it's like, oh man, it comes to the territory, just take it in. Yeah. But I'm actually like, well, firstly, you need to understand that I was writing songs and I really wanted to express something that was tied into greater creativity. Like I said, like with the art, and it was just like, I have the story to share and I wanted to reach the consumer in a way that it is not damaged, which is one of the reasons why I decided to be an independent artist. I just wanted the soul of the song to travel from the place of inception, which is just my bedroom in my own quiet time, to the consumer or the person that needs to see it without like marketing getting involved, without suit saying your skirt's too long, you're boring us, without someone saying, yo, we need to whack the auto-tune on this thing and you need to go, you know, 75 million BPM so that it can fit with the current sound is this. I want to skip all of that. If I learn the whole value chain, I can protect the soul of the song.
Yes.
And that is how I became, you know, the back end person.
Yeah.
And so now, having been careful, trying to keep my whole life out of the freaking media space so that the focus is always the music, now getting to a place where people are like, it comes to the territory that people are digging. Mm. And also just like being exposed to how like being in the space now makes it difficult to be human. You know, people are flattening you in the sense that like they're not going to hold you in the same dark and light and the same
100%.
Grace that they hold themselves. All of those things, I find it a little bit disturbing, and I hate it when it happens to my colleagues, and I don't think it's fair that like just being gifted or focused on something to the extent that people know you now makes you a victim to when they're bored and they turn you into cannon fodder for their own boredom and their own insecurities. And literally are like, it's like we're tired of you being just a musician and just being focused on your craft. And now we want to make you a spectacle.
Huh.
And I'm just like, does it really have to be there? And if it comes with the territory, this, my friends, is the territory that I'm checking out of.
Yeah.
Respectfully. Mm. Because at the end of the day, what I would like is just to be a devotee of the art. Yeah. So that's why I'm like, I'm taking a break. Like, I'm good.
Oh, well, is that the reason?
It's one of the reasons, definitely. I struggle with it. Like, I really struggle that public perception or that your workspace that you've worked so hard to keep pure can be sullied by such silly things that come from the most ridiculous places and that they can really sway public perception. I'm not saying that I'm running away from that and that it's going to make me more immune, but I'm also saying, look, I'm paying a price for being here. I'm paying a price for showing up at these shows. I'm spending less time with my kids. Mm. I'm making a sacrifice because I feel like I have to carry some of these songs myself. Mm. All the songs that I write, some of them I have to sing myself. I know that when a song like that arrives, I'm like, okay, I know you don't want to be singing all the time and in front of people, but this one you have to carry to the people yourself. That's a sacrifice.
Oh.
And now if the byproduct of that means that I'm being, you know,
ridiculed,
bullied for fun, then I'm not going to, I'd rather not do that. I'd rather be a soccer mom and write songs.
Is this based on what happened recently on social media with the whole Smash Africa thing?
It's part of it, definitely. But also like, I mean, on a production artistic level, maybe I can tell you guys more about why I'm trying to see if it's worth my time to be completely on the road and to be completely exhausted.
Mm.
I also realize that there is a blessing, you know, in being in demand to perform live, and I'm completely grateful for that. And I think that like, I don't really have a lack mentality about that. This is my moment and my moment is only now and I'll never have this moment again. I need to go out in full force and take every single gig and go everywhere where I'm needed. I do think that I paid my dues last year and did that as much as I could, only to understand the like performance landscape. But now that I get it, I think for me, it's to think about places to perform and share the music that understand like, the kind of value that I want to share in terms of production. I'm struggling. I'm struggling a lot to be able to share myself fully with like the props I want to do and the visuals and the multidisciplinary stuff and the music and the production. It's difficult to be on the mega festivals. It's difficult to be in the spaces, you know, the cigar lounges, like where the mics won't work even though you've gone for sound check. Like, all of those things I understood. I get it, and I'm grateful for the experience. But I'm weighing it up that if the byproduct of that is also just this like fame monster increasing and this abuse being a normal thing that I'm meant to just accept, you know, it's something's not adding up, and I need to kind of recalibrate how I'm moving with this gift.
Mm.
Perhaps there's a way that I'm not exploring. If my I never wanted fame. I never wanted to be known. I just wanted to express this thing, you know? And I think I have enough mentors and I know enough people that are moving in a way that makes it clear that that's not what you want.
Mm.
So I have to just kind of sit back and I'm taking the year to just, I'm not performing this year.
Yeah.
I'm doing my last show on the 2nd of April. And then I have to do this for this show in June, at the end of June at the National Arts Festival, because I'm the Standard Bank Artist of the Year for music.
Yeah.
And that is a space that I really respect because I've been going there since I was a kid and I want to honor that invitation also because they let me exhibit my art and then I get to do the music and it's really just like getting me as a holistic artist.
You know? But you're still going to make music, right?
I'm going to take a break and just like be with my kids.
Lucky we need you, bro.
Guys, honestly.
Justin's about to send you a beat, bro.
That's why we haven't listened to you. You want songs?
I'm really so hurt. Like, I'm so hurt by it.
Jeez.
I'm hurt by it.
And what's sad is all the people who need your healing because you're legit like a healer through your music and stuff, you know? And I think there's people who need your music. There's people who've been carried through dark times by your music.
And I'm aware of that. You think so?
Yeah, if you're not putting out any healing.
But also, so if you think about it, if I'm saying I'm bruised and that I didn't see it, I didn't see this as a consequence of me loving my craft. I need to take a step back so that what I'm doing is coming from a place that isn't you know, this hurt and disappointed. And I also, you know, I know that this is just an isolated incident. I also just think, like, there's something going on. Like, technology is doing something to us that we are now starting to do to each other.
Sure.
You know, if you look at, like, how we're just being decompressed into memes, into JPEGs, you know, it's happening in every single platform where it's, like, the attention span to really take in someone as a layered, full human, you know. You need to, you're reduced to one line, you know. At this point, I'm reduced to a title. I'm a homewrecker. Oh. And I'm like, that doesn't happen to dudes as well, you know.
There's
also like, I'm experiencing this as an artist and as a devotee and as a woman. Oh. But I'm also saying that like, there's a greater ill where like, just the catfish can wake up and say, Ubani slept with Ubani. We legitimize that nonsense. Go and abuse that person for 2 days, they trend. And somehow we've made that normal. Somehow we are also turning each other into caricatures where we are just not able to hold each other's humanity. Technology is doing that to us, but now we're doing it to ourselves. And I don't understand why we are part of a great project of just like shrinking each other's humanity too. And I'm looking at it not only like my ego is bruised, but like my spirit is intact. And because I'm sensitive, I have to take a step back and say, how do I engage the space that is actually quite toxic?
Very.
But I have this song that I want to share. How do I do it without feeling like I'm being turned into a spectacle when I've never been about that, you know? And I mean, something like this, you know, that this stupid article, you know, you guys will say, smash your balls. But I'm being called a whore. This is the misogyny of the whole thing. When like, you know, that's the other evil thing about tabloids is that they have all the information in the world to clear that, like, this is just another story about a relationship that's ending.
How did that story come out, man? Because I never followed it. Was it like Musa Kaul or something?
I don't know.
No. I mean, it's just also my disdain for tabloid media is so deep as a person who believes in words. You know, like, I believe in the healing power of words. I believe in the power that words have to encourage and to edify and to clarify and to bring people out of dark spaces, because they've done that for me. And now a tabloid is kind of just like the opposite end of the spectrum, the thing that I hate the most, because they are intentionally distorting the truth every day. People buy that, and it's a machine that has no consequence for destroying people's lives.
Yeah.
And we've all bought into it. We reshare that article.
100%.
And we do that thing, and it's just normal. But like, you know, I mean, I don't know.
So it was an article?
It was an article.
Oh, and then it caught flames on
it was an article that obviously, like, you know, if you look into the article, all the information to separate me from the end of that relationship is there. But, like, you're not going to expect a space that's looking for a sensation to go and make that call, to go be like, this has got nothing to do with Umsaiki. But because there's been nothing but, you know, music or art coming from this person, this is going to catch a fire if it has your name on it.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, for me, I'm also an empath to the extent that I understand that it's difficult to watch somebody that you once cared for happy and at peace, and that people do really strange, malicious things when they're hurt. But it's also like, I'm really hurt that a person would intentionally go and know that if my name is linked to this thing, that it would hurt my space that I've tried so hard to keep pure. And I'm just like, if you can do that to a person who's just tried to be non-problematic, and the reason why I am able to activate a story like that is just because I've been focused on my work, what am I doing this for, you know? And it's not to say that I'm backing out because of something like that, but it hurts me that just because I've been focused on my work and people know my name because of my work, that can make me a victim of something like that.
Jeez, dude.
But besides that, I also don't like the fact that it's normal now for, you know, some other catfish on the internet to just say what they want, and for people to validate that.
Oh, man.
With belief, response, with a...
How did the tabloid get the story? Like, who was the leak, the snitch?
What is the story?
I don't know. You tell us.
It's really... I don't think it's any... It's a gross violation of privacy. It's like no one's business.
Mm.
But that's the point. The point is that, like, you're in the space and things that are a gross violation of people's privacy becomes people's business, you know? It's just a story of a relationship ending. I don't have anything to do with that relationship ending. Mm. But I'm dragged in as the
So
the
which course. Relationship is ending?
No. Smashes.
Oh, yes. Smash. Okay.
So that relationship is over.
I'm
trying to understand. I didn't follow the story. Did you follow the story, Saul?
Well, they made it seem
like... It's not my story, but yeah.
Yeah, they made it seem like it's over because of her, but clearly it was over already.
Yeah.
But you still married, though.
No. That's also like none of your business.
Yeah, for sure. But you know...
But...
Well, she did say no.
That's wild.
It's rough out here for a thug.
And I know Smash. We used to work together at Wine.
Yeah,
did you work
with us used to be colleagues. Yeah, colleagues at Wine.
I could see why you'd get with a guy like Smash.
No, man. Smash is a great guy.
Yeah,
he is.
I just have nothing to do with the end of his relationship. And I'm just hurt.
Doesn't it suck that now that it's out there, like, there's nothing you can do? People, like you're saying, they've already labeled you a homewrecker.
You know,
we don't even know the truth. And, you know... Like, nobody even knows what's going on. But already, that's out there. You know what I mean?
This is the thing that I think is really unfair about this whole media machine, especially when people are looking for you to be a spectacle, is that, like, there will never be enough attention on that story as much as those 2 days that
it was true. Yeah, of course.
I could put out 1,000 statements.
Yeah,
Nobody's even listening to what anything.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it doesn't...
Yeah,
there's a part of that that can't ever be fixed. But there's also something that I believe about the truth, and that, like... You know, the posture of your heart will make anything that you say about anything. Like, the truth will seep out in different ways. Mm. And that takes time. It's just that, like, sometimes, you know, to go and actively defend yourself in that moment when there's so many other things at stake, you know, there's a whole family, there's a whole person going through something really hard. There's a person who's also dealing with, you know, someone in their life who doesn't want to see them happy and will destroy anything around them. And so for me, that's also like a really sad thing, but it's not an abnormal story. People are going through the ends of relationships
every single day.
But for that now, this is the gross violation of privacy that I think we've normalized that is just not normal.
Mm.
Where now, you know, how is that a story?
Mm.
Like, how is that even a story? And the only thing that is making it a story is because that there's an entity here that is known for being unproblematic, you know?
True.
And so that kind of stuff is disturbing to me.
But don't you think this is a good platform to tell your side of the story and just clear the air and be like, guys, that's all fake news. This is what's going on.
I mean, I guess because part of me would be like, it isn't really my story.
You know?
Like, and I would have expected the person whose story it is to clear it up.
Whose story is it? Or who do you think it is?
Whose story is it?
Whose story is it?
Whose story is it anyway?
Is it Smash's story?
It's not my story.
Is it his wife's story?
It's not my story.
It's their story.
It's not my story, guys.
But you're part of it.
It's not my story. You know, and I think... I mean, if there's... I guess I find myself in this position because this is now like... The only bit of personal information that is out there about me in 10 years.
Yes, I was about to say, when you said people invade your private life, I was like, actually, I've never heard anything about you until like now.
That's literally, I mean, it would be unwise of me to not just say that, like, I have nothing to do with the end of that relationship. And I'm appalled that, like, firstly, media with information. I mean, like, guys, People attempting to divorce people divorcing, that's a public document. Like, tabloids are so dodgy that they will go to police.
They camp out there.
They'll go to police stations, look at statements, or they've got snitches, you know, and will pretend that what you've written on a statement saying, oh, my dog got lost on the 17th of April, they will pretend that they had a conversation with you and they will quote you. Tabloids are quoting people that they haven't spoken to. It's appalling to me that people will take that and think that those timelines and that truth is not being distorted. And for me, it hurts that, like, I get caught up in a story and the person whose story it is is not in a position and doesn't take the initiative to clear my name.
Yeah.
That hurt me, but I also understand that, like, I understand why that's a difficult thing, you know, when you're dealing with a really difficult past, you know? And for me, I think separating it from like, oh, my brand is experiencing this. I'm experiencing this. My ego is experiencing an embarrassing thing. Like, a whole love letter, bro. A letter was published in the fucking tabloid. Like, I wrote something from my heart and it ended up in the tabloid. That is so humiliating. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I understand why it's difficult to speak back when something like that happens. But at the same time, I'm like, okay, well, I'm left to my own devices. And I didn't ever want to speak back to a tabloid because I literally think that they're disgusting. Mm. But if now my space is tainted and I'm, you know, can't even post about a gig without someone saying, I think for me, it's like, if the facts are available, public documents say when people file for divorce. Mm. If people have not been living up in the same place for a year, that information is there if you want to find it. Yeah. If you want to maliciously make me the cause of the end of a relationship, when people have been divorcing or doing whatever they're doing, if the relationship has been clearly over and everybody knows it, but and it's clear from me even speaking to this person or knowing this person or spending time, and it's a very clear distance and everyone knows that, for you to go and conflate that intentionally because you can't deal with this person's happiness, that is like another kind of evil that's a fitting collaboration for a tabloid. Mm. So I can't speak to that, especially knowing what I would believe about words.
And have you spoken to Smash Africa since these news broke?
Yeah. We were good for a while, you know. But I think it's just the disappointment of like you could say the truth, but at the same time, I also understand when you're like, I don't deal with tabloids. I don't say anything about social media. Yeah. But if it's actively damaging my life,
and you got
life,
the bear, you got the
oh, obviously, yeah, you know. So it hurts, but it's like it's life, you know. And for me, it's not an energy that I want to meet with the same kind of maliciousness, but it is what it is. And I have to
feel a bit betrayed because, like you're saying, if a divorce takes place and then there's a letter post-divorce, it means then either one of two people could have leaked it, because it's not like wife found the letter somewhere when they weren't even living together.
Dude, that's a whole complicated story. But like I said, it's not my story. Mm. And all I can say is that it's a gross violation of privacy, and whoever had an agenda to not see this person happy anymore did what they did, and they found a happy collaborator in a medium that doesn't care for the truth and doesn't care for consequence. And I think for me, you know, I'm not going to sit here and give you the details of the story,
of course,
because it's horrible and it's very sad. Mm. But at the same time, it's like truth and time have got this inevitable conversation where, you know, the posture of everyone's heart is going to be exposed. Mm. And I can't actively go and put down a case trying to clear my name, even though I can say that, like, you know, I would never do that to anyone's home, you know.
Man,
and that's just the end. That's the beginning and end. And what I'm really grateful for is that, like, even before any explanation or any information more from me, there are people that just, like, were in my corner. They were like, guys, please. And this is the other part that I think is really weird and toxic about this supposed celebrity culture and this pedestaling of us, is that, like, I don't want to partake in any undue pardoning. If I've done something wrong, I've done something wrong. Mm. I don't expect to be unduly pardoned for making mistakes as a human being. Mm. I also just think that, like, I don't want to be unduly attacked when I've done nothing wrong. Mm. Just because, you know, I am who I am, or I've done what I've done, or, you know, I think people really need to be more careful in terms of this, like, you know, not understanding that we're just human beings, just trying to get through life, just trying to love, just trying to encourage. And all I did in that situation was love someone, encourage somebody, and I thought that they were clear of whatever their past meant.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I've been roped into it to seem like I've gone and I've broken something that I found essentially completely broken.
And this is, like, dude, you're the worst person this can happen to, because you just mind your business, you know? There's people in the industry that would love that fame.
Ooh, there's people who would be like, why is she not going live? Go live! Give me your phone! There's literally people, it's oxygen.
You know what I mean? And you don't want none of that, bro, you know? So I mean, for it to happen to you, it's really disheartening.
I guess I'm speaking about it now reluctantly, also because I was like, this is not my business. But actually, it's affected me to the point where, you know, I work with young people. I have a foundation.
Yeah.
And I also work with families. And if there's a hint or a whiff of this kind of, you know, like, persona, how do you go and work with families, schools? Yeah. I have a collaboration with some brands where, you know, it's called the Fisher Life Foundation. And it's literally just like trying to figure out how to help young people actualize these things. And if there's a mistrust, you know, about how I fit into the family unit, it's not great. Yeah. And those things I've had to mourn. And I think I'm going to just take time to mourn some of those things that are because nobody will ever care as much as they did. And I can say whatever I want, but you can't erase those things, you know? And it's just unfortunate. But I also know that, like, I think there are enough people that see my heart and my work speaks for itself. And trusting that will see me on the other side of all of those things, you know, as unfortunate as it is. But, like, I really think I'm taking the break for the right reason, Saul. And yeah, I think part of it is just being, like, if I have to be realistic that, like, yes, I am known.
Yes.
And yes, I do love to write songs. And yes, I don't want to be in the public eye in this way. Mm. But this is the byproduct of what I do.
Yeah.
It is a part that I have to accept. And you guys have accepted it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You understand the people that come to the show.
Every second, every minute, there's a meme.
You know, and I can't be naive about that. So yeah. I think taking a step back is also to be like, how do I do that and serve my gift?
Mm.
You know? And be available for the people that really are, like, benefiting from me using this medium as a way to firstly heal and make sense of my own life, and then I get to share that. So I can't be a kid about it. I can't just be whining and being like, oh, I don't like being a celebrity.
I smell a hit coming out of here. You sound really depressed.
I've already written songs.
I smash it.
Umfanele bandine blue belt and two white stripes.
Umlandele.
No, guys, I'll be fine. But yeah. I really wanted to also just, like, this is cool to be able to have this chat before I disappear.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And for people to know that, like, my heart is still in it, you know, but I just need to just take a bit of time.
I wanted to ask you, how does one get to work with you? Because I know Saul DM'd you. He's still waiting for a reply.
That's not how. That's definitely not how. No, but it makes sense now because you're such a...
Yeah.
A spiritual person.
Energy.
Yeah,
energy. Yeah. Killing
which
me.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
No, bro, I'll die if I did a song with you. Oh my goodness.
What I mean, a soul. I love you, soul.
It's meant to as well. Yeah.
When,
you know,
when the time is right, soul. Yeah,
thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
When the time is right.
All right, cool. Let's have some fun, man. We're going to play a game. It's called Smash or Pass. Okay. With your producers. We're going with your producers. Let's go. Are you ready for the first one?
Guys. You also have to come and take responsibility.
For what?
What, like...
Sincerity, no.
Guys, it's controversial to come to your place because of your naughty tendencies. And I was like,
man, we just had
I'll never not go. Like, we had this conversation at Zakes' place. I was like, yo, we have to have this conversation. Like, almost a year ago, right?
Yeah.
Because there's something special about you guys, but you are naughty.
Look, man, we have childlike behavior. Yeah. We know that, but it comes from a good place. You know what I mean?
What have I gotten myself into?
Okay. So we're going to play Smash or Pass producer edition. Ne?
Yeah.
Yeah. Moby Dixon, would you smash or pass?
What kind of smash are you talking about?
All the guys you've produced with and worked with.
This is so unbearable. This brings me to my next topic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Since this is my show, so. Guys, I cannot have a collaboration without someone putting me in a fucking couple. What is up with that?
Oh, is that a thing?
No, it's like, it's almost what it says to me is that, like, it's like, okay, there's always going to be, if you're a female working with a male, there's always this assumption or this question that, like, are they working together? I've never felt that.
No, yeah, about you. I've never felt that about you.
It's the guys you collaborate with.
Yeah.
People have said you and Prince KB.
No, bro, it's disgusting. But it's also like, part of it is that, like, unchecked bias of that weird, like, surely for them to be working together, it's because there's some intimate whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's also just saying that we don't think that women are talented enough.
Mm.
That's the actual chat is that, like, we think that women are kind of talented. They're good enough to be the vocalists and the hundreds and thousands on the sprinkles on top of the beautiful, like, you know, of the genius that the man has produced with his fingers and his keyboard and his mind. And then the woman will come.
So we're not playing this game.
What the heck is this game, bro? Why would I? These are all my brothers.
Let's just have some fun.
No, how? How are we I don't see any of these people in this way.
Okay.
Let me see this list of yours. This is shocking. So, please come up with another game. It's not happening. Smash who?
What is your
also,
type?
Also, this is a terrible word.
No, it was carefully chosen.
What is your type? What is your type, Vel? Like, what are you, what kind of guys are you?
I used to be into jocks because I played sports. I used to be into, like, I think also because I'm so comfortable with my with my masculinity and the balance that my masculinity has with my femininity. I grew up a tomboy. I'm sure you can tell.
Yeah.
That's why why the lesbians are out here so confused.
But so how, like, do you feel when people think you're a lesbian?
Like? Fine. It doesn't bother me at all. I understand why. Because people are not used to seeing people that are very comfortable in their balance. Gotcha. I know that I'm strong. Like, I am strong. Yeah. I grew up being faster than... I played Shibobo fans. I played cricket. I was like a cricket player in my high school for a boys' team. Mm. I started out as a scorer, you know. And I've always understood that, like, people don't know how to accept that. They will call it weird things like being a tomboy first, and then later you can't... They want to understand your sexuality. But I think the main thing is that I'm very balanced. Mm-hmm. And so my type first used to be... I would like overly masculine dudes because I was so strong.
Yeah.
So you'd have to be like a stronger jock or like a better sportsman or faster, you know? And then I realized that spiritually those people were lacking for me. I would find, we would like connect over having a lot of energy and wanting to do stuff outside. And, you know, I love playing outside. And that's always like an important part of a relationship for me. But then if we can't really grow together vulnerably, spiritually, and figure out like what we're trying to do here... Mm. And sometimes I'd find that those hyper-masculine environments wouldn't allow for men to really get into that soft space where they're also understanding their feminine side and their sensitive, intuitive side. So then later in my life, my type was really like, if you are very comfortable with your masculinity to the point that you don't have to overperform it, I would like you.
Got you.
If you're a little bit like... You're comfortable with your sensuality, with your sensitivity, and you were like a little bit masculine because you weren't threatened by my masculinity.
Yeah.
Then we'd get along.
And does size matter for you?
The size of what? The cricket bat. I really love a really good girth on a cricket bat.
Oh.
Gotta have a good grip on it. Good grip. Cover drives need to just happen seamlessly.
Yeah.
What about you, Sol? Do you like cricket?
I love cricket. My bat always has a rubber on it, though.
That's a smart man.
And that's smart how man. You do it, kids. That's how you segue, you see?
Spend a lot of time in the nets.
It's true, you can't cook.
I spend time in the nets. I love cooking. What is that?
Oh, mean? Shit. I read something that you can't cook.
Really? Yeah? This is why you mustn't believe the tabloids.
Yeah, hence why. That's what I'm asking
you. What a joke.
You.
No, yeah. I love cooking.
What do you like making?
I like making stuff that has pesto in it.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
I really like vegetarian food because I was a vegan for a long time. I like making...
did you stop being vegan?
I stopped. I'm a bit of a flexitarian now, but I stopped. The day my brother was coming back from the bush.
Okay.
And then they put like a leg of lamb, like a whole side of a sheep for me and my sisters and people that grew up with him.
Yeah.
To eat because we had to sort of honor that he came back safely and his life and I was given a knife and they were like, get in there. And I was like, but I'm a vegan. I'm a vegan. But hey, they called my mother from Mexico. They're like, Lomdana, you know, and I think from that day, it sort of taught me that like, it's fine having your ideals, but like there are instances where you just have to let it go and just be like, okay, the ceremony is about this.
Yeah.
I'm not betraying my principles by having a bit of meat in honor of my brother.
Yeah.
And I just relaxed from then on. Like I used to be so hectic.
Before you go, man, I gotta ask you, man.
Yeah.
How's it like working with Kabza? Because for me, I think he's so talented, bro. God. I think that guy's amazing, man. So I can only imagine like what it's like working with him in studio.
He's a really interesting guy. I love that he's built a really beautiful model for also teaching other producers and enabling them. So, you know, usually I find Kabza in the studio, but there'll always be someone there if I've got something to leave or I have to go pick something up. But working with him personally, there's a different touch. When he walks into the room, something changes.
Wow.
His touch on the keyboard, even if someone else had an idea that was budding or he had started something and left it with a younger producer, when he comes back, there's something that he's got, like a creative outlook and a base, you know, that's just very genuine. Tandu Mgulo, la chap.
Sure.
Tandu Mgulo. I really respect him. And I think he's done something really, really strong for the industry.
And when you guys are cooking, it's too much.
He's really special.
How did the Diplo thing come about?
Oh, man.
He's one, another one of my favorites. I love Diplo, man.
So, what an interesting guy. He's actually one of the sweetest. He's a bit of a chakra hunk.
Yeah.
And okay. He's very, like, very sensitive to, you know, people's journeys. And he's actually been one of the most supportive people in terms of my ambition to grow as a songwriter.
Yeah.
I think my ambition to grow as a songwriter is 60% and my artist ambition is 40%.
Okay.
That's kind of how much I love songwriting. Yeah. And he noticed that immediately when we interacted. He had been DMing me and I wasn't really big on, like, Instagram.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine took a screenshot.
Diplo DM'd you?
I think I missed it for a year.
Whoa!
And then a friend of mine posted something about coming to LA. And then he wrote on the actual post.
Yeah.
And then a friend of mine screenshotted that and sent it to me. He's like, are you doing a song with Diplo? And I was like, who's that? And then I went and I realized that I've been listening to Diplo through his project, LSD.
Yeah.
Which is Labyrinth, Sia, and Diplo. Sia is one of my favorite songwriters
in the world.
And they're homies and they work together. And so I think I realized he's been trying to reach out. And then I messaged him back and I told him I'm coming to LA. And then we just hung out in Malibu. And we've probably got like maybe 15, 20 songs between us that we just worked
on. Wow, that is wild.
But he also is great because, like, he'll check stuff out and he's like, he will send it, he'll pitch it to, you know, Justin Bieber, to Rihanna, to it. And there's been a few songs where, you know, like, I've heard them back, some of the demos in their voices, and he's really just encouraging as well. Like, really, he's really about the art, is, you know. And so, I think he's got a great, yeah, I think he's a personality that splits a lot of people, but I think he's got an amazing ear.
Yeah,
he gets something about, like, music and different genres, you know. Yeah.
So you're telling me you could have done a song with Rihanna and Justin Bieber?
Dude, Rihanna apparently thought my shit was weird. She's like, I like this, but this girl is weird. What is that lyric? And he's like, she's strange.
Yeah.
And Justin, I think it just didn't work for his, what is this album they did? Justice.
Yeah.
Didn't work, but I like the fact that, like, I can pitch to them.
Wow.
And I think I want to just really focus, you know, one day I want to write a song for John Legend or for Adele.
Just
because I think there's space for that, like, just that storytelling, like, just that guitar or piano and voice. Everybody, even the pop stars, just need a song where it's just grounding and it's just, like, speaking from the heart. And I feel like there are a lot of musicians that can carry that song further, you know, than I could as an artist and as a voice.
How does that happen, man, where you're having conversations with Justin Bieber and Rihanna in the same sentence as you? Is it, like, purely on your work or connections, like, because you met so-and-so and so, or it's like they just fuck with your vibe?
I think it's a bit of both. And I think this is the beauty of the back-end possibility is that, you know, when you are represented by the right people, even having a good publishing company that can maybe send your demos to Rihanna's people, that's one thing. Like, that's why I'm, you know, like, I'm signing with a publishing company in the States. But outside of that, that's a random, you know, friendship with someone like Diplo who's like, who can probably get an answer from the artist directly. And if the artist is excited about the song, the company needs to listen. And I think for me, I just want to spend time just exploring those possibilities and spending a lot more time in LA, just also learning how to be a better songwriter. Because those are pressure cookers.
Yeah.
You know, like in a session, in one day I can do like 20 songs with like three different producers. And that's just kind of like the muscle that needs to be activated. And my love is songwriting, and I wish that we had a more inclusive, collaborative songwriting culture in South Africa, because that's like, we would see different levels of projects, because we're expecting artists to write their fourth album, like, without help. Like, you just wrote your first three. Like, let someone else write with you and support you through that and get your voice out. So if I could do that more for female artists in South Africa, I'd also be happy. Just hold space to tell their stories, help them tell their stories from different angles. You know, but record companies don't want to spend on the artists. They don't want to spend. They don't want to invest in their pre-production. You know,
locally, who are some of the, like, those female artists you listen to? And you're like, yo, if I could just write for you.
Well, you know, luckily I get to, like, Tanusa was one, but I get to hold space for her in different ways. You know, and I want to do more of that for her. Shoma Josie is definitely one. I also started working with her. I just think she's so special.
She is,
and yeah, I think she's a generational talent. Ami Fagu is one of my favorite songwriters, storytellers. We really, like, are good friends, and we have a strange relationship. We see each other, like, you know, not as often as I'd like, but whenever we do, we're just always reminded that, like, we get along. And I think naturally, like, we've had so many songs that have just happened by hanging out with Sanal.
Yeah.
And if we were more intentional about it, I think we'd do a lot of damage.
Yeah, I know you would, definitely. You know?
So I'm, you know, hoping for more time with people like that. I love Shekhana as well.
And in Africa?
Good. Shekhana is one of my favorite voices, for sure.
And in Africa?
I mean, I would fall over and just faint if I could do a song with Ira Starr.
Mm.
I love Thames. I love Angelique Kidjo.
Ooh.
I love... Yo, there's just so many artists. And I think this is the thing, is that, like, they're all within reach. Asha.
Yeah.
Asha.
Asha, she actually reached out. She's based in London. And all of these people are one person away.
Mm.
And I think for me, it's like, what I like about the back-end songwriting space is that there's not a lot of blocking. People are like, oh, you made this session easier. I need you to go and help with this session.
Yeah.
I need you in Asha's session. I need you in that. Whereas with the artists meeting ego to ego,
yes.
the contacts aren't flowing as easily because people are just seeing themselves as brands that are fighting for a space. And it's an illusion because Ami has her own space. Shekhana has her own space. I have my own space. Everybody's got their own space. There's no one that can take anything away from anyone.
Mm.
There's nobody that can replace Atande Somaswai. There's no need. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's why it's easier to collaborate when you understand that. When you understand that a collaboration is there to enhance the thing that makes that other person the most unique.
Oof.
You're there to highlight the unique selling points of that artist. And I love collaborating. That's why I will always be like happy to do a song with someone and to, you know, help carry their story or strengthen their project.
Have you ever said no to a song and then it became big?
Yeah, I have.
Which one?
I think something that the Kiffness sent me.
Oh, okay.
What else? There's a few, but it wasn't meant to be my song. That's all. So.
I know. I'm at peace. Don't worry. I'm at peace. I'm good.
Bro, do you smoke or like do you drink?
I don't smoke. You mean like smoke weed?
Yeah, smoke weed.
No, I don't. I think.
Wow, you'd strike me as someone to smoke weed, bro.
Everyone thinks I smoke weed.
Yeah.
I'm already too relaxed, man.
Ah, got you.
Yeah, and I used to be part of this, like, I was like the relo of my hip hop crew.
You're in the hip hop crew.
Oh my god. Yeah, I was the chorus girl to this hip hop crew called what are they called? But they were like A-side. A-side is Amalinda.
Yeah.
And a lot of my friends there, we played basketball, we skated, we surfed. We were just like, you know, small town beach bum kids.
Yeah.
And and I remember they were biting Tupac lines. They're smoking, yeah. Thinking that like they can't be creative without these hits.
Yeah.
And I think it put me off a little bit from the idea of that enhancing creativity. But they were just young kids trying to figure out, you know, their creative voice. But I think it put me off for a long time. And I'll be open, you know, in the future. But I just think my creativity is independent from that.
And you've never dabbled into like mushrooms and...
I've had a really good shrooms trip. And I would do it again. Yeah, it was very enlightening. And it was very... I learned a lot about myself. And I think there was like a lot of... I traveled very far into my spirit in that short space of time. So I would do it again. But I think it just needs a really controlled, safe environment.
Ah, man, if you've done shrooms, I gotta do shrooms, man. Misaki has done
shrooms. Yeah, it sounds like ayahuasca. It reminds me of that ayahuasca experience.
Did you do ayahuasca?
No. We were told about it by a good friend of ours.
Eugene. We felt like we were doing it when we were telling the story. Yeah.
I'm open.
And do you drink?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a big part of my life, but I'm not allergic to gin. I'll have the odd gin. I'll have a good glass of wine.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Fuck, man. It's been awesome having you here, man. I'm psyched. You're such a beautiful soul. Yeah. When it's all said and done, what do you want to be remembered as,
Oh, man. I want to be remembered as one of the most encouraging people to have worked in this artistic space. When I come back and I'm a bit more healed soul, I hope to write more songs that are just... Yeah, encouraging and also just like collaborate with other people's bravery and wants for themselves to be better. Because people are like, I heard Fetch Your Life and it saved my life. It helped me quit my job. And I'm always like, guys, you were so close already to taking that leap that changed your life. And hearing a song on the radio was just like the nudge that you needed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my absolute honor to sometimes be in a space where I can be that nudge. And if I can keep orchestrating art and music that places myself in people's hearts and trust that they can allow me to be part of their story in that way, to be like, I'd started my bakery after hearing Fetch Your Life. That stuff is like mind-blowing and it's so humbling. And I want to be able to do more of that you know. So I just want to thank people, you know, for having an open heart to these songs that come from, like, mostly a broken place sometimes. Oh. And I think I'm glad that I also wasn't scared to share the song that got me out of the dark space, and I somehow put it out there, and then it did a similar thing for other people. So, yeah.
So because you heal people, who heals you?
I don't know if I heal people. I collaborate with people's intention to heal themselves. I'm a space holder, you know. I'm a vessel of a potential healing song. But, like, you need to be open to healing.
Who does that for you?
I have a really, you know, I have a really beautiful relationship with silence and my inner world. I think, you know, my relationship with just, like, the magic of life and this universal song, which I think is orchestrated by this greater force of love, that I seek out. Like, I try and try to tap into that. I try and figure that out in small ways, just keeping quiet, you know.
Dude, man.
That's the space that heals me. I also think that I get those messages in my intuition to move a certain way. And even this decision is part of that intuition saying, because, you know, this is not what this gift is for. Like, you can do this in a better way. And you can figure out your life as a devotee in a slightly different way. And I think those are the things that heal me. Other people's music heals me. Friendships heal me. I've been spending time with Jesse Clegg, and his dad was one of my absolute favorite musicians. And I'm discovering that, like, that way of being is also transferable, you know, in generations. And friendships and relationships can heal. I haven't really thought about it like that before, like, who heals me? But I really think that I get every opportunity for my spirit to remain intact. And the things that remain fractured and broken are not that important. Like, what is an ego? Like, what is a brand? Like, all those things can be rebuilt.
Yeah.
But, like, the spirit still remains resilient. And the fact that there's a chance to move forward to the next day, there's a chance to still have the audacity to hope. That for me is the power of art and the magic that we all, like, connect over those small little things. Like, why do you care about my music?
Yeah.
You know? And why do I feel like it's important to come and honor your gift and being here?
And to
say that there's a gift that you have.
For sure.
By letting people
be themselves. It's there somewhere.
This is one of the spaces that unflattens us. That whole project of decompressing ourselves to ourselves so that we can be caricatures and JPEGs and memes. And we're reducing ourselves to, like, one word so that we can share. Because if you think about compression, you can't share anything that's full or interesting or detailed.
Yeah.
You have to compress it.
Yes.
It won't go. You can't upload it on the internet. You can't put it on. It'll say, your video is too heavy.
Yeah.
It's containing too much information about a person's fullness. It's reducing ubuntu bomdu. So if there's a space where I can come here and say, I'm hurt that happened.
Yeah.
Or I'm saying, actually, you know, the reason why I write songs is this.
Mm.
You're providing a space that is doing the opposite of what technology is doing to us. And that's part of why I think it's important that people come here.
Yeah.
And we need more spaces like this, you know. You guys need to stop with those silly games.
Hey, the game.
But it's fun.
We take
you with your good and your bad.
Light and shame.
Because we are whole experiences. I can't reduce you to your blind spots. I can't reduce you to the moments where you've made mistakes.
Well, yeah.
True.
You know what I mean?
True.
And y'all have fucked up.
All the time, man. Fuck up is my middle name.
You're not perfect. Hey.
Hey, Pranduka, you got a question there?
Yeah, your visual art, man. I'm curious about that. How do we access it?
Like, I'm going to invite you to some shows. I'm going to have more time, right, on my hands now that I'm not getting choked by the mics of Kidela Lounge. I love you, Kidela Lounge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to... I'll do an exhibition. I'm going to do something with the Boto Project Space, which is the space that Nelson Magamo started. I'm going to do something in LA with some friends there. I'm obviously putting on this exhibition at the National Arts Festival. Mm. And my album launch was a whole 10-installation walking concert with visual art that I had made at NIROX. I did a 2-month residency where I made work and I built sculptures and I made installations. So, I mean, some people got to see that, which was really special. But that's literally my heart. That's, like, that's who I am. Not just an MP3.
Yeah. Bro, do you have fun, bro? Like,
do I seem serious?
Yeah, it seems
I'm
like...
I play golf.
Yeah.
you know.
Like, could you go to a club and
oh, yeah.
get shit-faced and pass out by the toilet?
I mean, I'm just, no.
You can't, ne?
Not really, but like, I mean, where's this place? There's this place, what is it called? Damn, there were people dancing on the DJ booth in, you know, this place. So Anati took me to this crazy place and I was like, what is
Anati the
this
producer? Place?
Anati's outside.
What?
He took me to, he was hosting this one night and it was this, oh, please come back to me.
Oh what area? Maybe we can help you. What area is it in?
It's close to Keys Avenue.
Rosebank. Nostra.
No.
Nostra.
No. I was just like, this is a portal into another dimension. And I do not live here.
Yeah.
I mean, I can have fun.
Bleh.
It's just that I am a very serious person. I'm a melancholy soul. Like, I'm pensive. I'm always thinking deeply. But at the same time, I'm like an absolute idiot.
Yeah.
People don't know how hilarious I am, McG. It's pain. Like, it's painful.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking, because I can feel those vibes. But, you know, we never see that so much.
I mean, you know. I'm a funny girl. I don't know what else to say.
Saki, thank you so much for coming through, man. Yeah, it's really been an honor. I'm so glad you're the first guest we had this year because I love you so much and I've been wanting to have you. When we met at the Zakes thing, and I'm like, yeah, you must come through. I was like, there's no way Saki's going to come.
I said I was going to come, though.
No, but celebrities always say that. They're like, yeah, I will come.
He was like...
No, guys, okay, but also, if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do something.
Oh, thank you, man. Brilliant. Thank you so much, man.
I'm going to miss you, though.
I'll be back.
Yeah.
Maybe when I'm back, I'll come and let people know. I'll be like, yo.
Yeah, you gotta come,
awesome.
Man.
But yeah.
And I wanna send you some beats, man. Fucking hell, man.
I'll listen to them in 20.
Do you charge? Like, you don't charge?
I don't.
So it's just split sheets and all that?
No. I don't think you, it's, yeah, I think it's.
Wait, you don't do split sheets?
I do split sheets. Okay. I just don't charge for collaborations in that way. Because usually they are a byproduct of a friendship or a willing, like, a, you know? Mm. A natural willingness to work together, and I think you just decide what the song is for, whose project it's going to be for,
or if you release
it, you know. But
what do you enjoy more? He sends you beats, or you sit down in the studio?
I love being in the studio.
He can't.
Work best, I'm trying. Work best. Leave him. Leave him.
I wanted to ask you, have you ever
seen... I'm loving in studio.
Sunil produce. Does he produce?
Guys, this is so rude.
Yeah?
This question is so rude. Sunil is literally one of the best producers in this whole fucking continent.
Wow.
I'm swearing for the first time.
Hey, we're going to see
you.
That's my bestie, bro.
That shows the bond, man.
Dude, that guy is so talented.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, his sound... when you mentor well, people take on your sound.
Oh, yes.
Claudio and Kenza.
Guys, also don't believe everything.
I'm saying hence Claudio and Kenza. He mentored them.
Yeah.
Your sound is transferable. You know, you're teaching people how to hear, teaching people how to mix, teaching people how to perceive distance and negative space in a song. That is transferable. And like, Usana, you know, even the first time we were in studio together, I watched him take the sample, change the BPM, shift the key. Whoa. And then I was like, oh, okay, I think there's something there. I think, you know, and he builds the thing right in front of you.
Wow.
And it's like, I don't think collectively in the time that we've worked together, we could have maybe spent 8 hours in studio together. Oh. We've got so many songs.
Yes.
But it's like each song gets made in like 30 minutes.
Wow.
An hour is probably the longest because it just comes out, you know? And yeah, so we're really looking forward to like having some intentional time also, like to just to make some more music and to put it in the vault.
Hey man, what do you think of piano?
I love it. I'm a piano. I love the tenacity. I love the energy. I like the fact that it's open to becoming subgenres.
Okay.
And I think that if people stop this purist mindset, I'm not a purist by the way, people stop this purist mindset and let piano evolve into whatever it's going to be, let it go. Let it go. If there's a piano country song one day, like just... And also the fact that it's created careers and new stars and changed people's lives. Like there's a before and after. There's something really, really important about that.
Yeah.
And I love the young piano ladies and the way that they're taking their artistry and performance seriously. Like I love Gamo, I love Pabi, but I love all of them because they're just like, I'm a star. I must show up the right way. I must put in the effort. I must rehearse.
Yeah. And they're getting so much love, like, internationally. Like, it's blowing up. It's crazy.
They deserve all of it. Yeah. Yeah. I have time for it, for sure.
Saki, thank you so much, man. This has been amazing, man.
I'm saying goodbye for real now.
Yeah.
Sharp.
No, but I hope you do heal and, you know, whatever you want to come out of this, I hope you get it, you know, because you deserve it, man. I mean, you've been making music for 10 years nonstop, right?
2013. But, like, obviously, you know, you don't get known straight away. But I've been there. I've been there just trying to share the music and be about the music.
Yeah.
And I think that's not going to change. And I think I just need that time to sort of refocus on that. Like, that's my first love.
It's so profound what you're saying, because no one does that, bro, in the game, eh? No one ever goes back to refocus and re-energize and realign.
It's because there's a culture of you're hot now, so take everything and don't stop. Because we've seen some people disappear, then come back, and it becomes difficult after a break.
So you're not scared about that, ne?
I don't think I have that fear at all. I don't have, you know, and obviously we'll see what happens in the future. But I honestly think it makes sense why people are afraid of that. And I could have another year like last year where I'm just like not seeing my kids every single weekend. And, you know, during the week it's corporates. I'm running a company, so it's Zoom meetings. Guys, that chock-a-block lifestyle can be made as glamorous as possible. There's nothing glamorous about burning out.
Yeah.
There's nothing glamorous about not being able to be a good friend because I can't answer the phone. There's nothing glamorous about having less time to speak to my parents.
Hey, dude.
Absolutely nothing is worth that. And I can have another year identical. I can see it. I can see it's happening.
Nah.
And I'm just like, shut it down. From the 2nd of April, I'm not a performer. Mm. And I promise you, there will be an exponential reward in me choosing to be a more holistically grounded person with a fuller life. I don't think I'm going to miss anything because of that.
Mm.
And this badge of having burnout, I had to sit with 16 drips over dessert. Listen, there's nothing cool about that.
Nah,
so you never recover from that.
Hey.
People think that you can recover from burnout. You don't.
And the road is crazy. I'm always telling Saul, man. I'm like, the road is crazy. I'm like, hey, dude, this gigging thing. It's a young man's sport.
Yeah. But I trust that my gift will carry me. It has so far. And when I have something to say, again, hopefully it will resonate. And the other thing is that, like, I have to. I want to be a good mother. Yeah. I don't want to miss, you know, another tooth. I don't want to miss another.
How many kids you got?
I have three.
Three? Oh, dope. Yeah. Yes.
That's.
Okay. All right. No, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. Those are my babies, and I'm it's a big part of my growth as a person, and I really want to be present for it, you know, and I think I'll get rewarded for that, choosing more time with them as well. Yeah.
Jeez, man. Beautiful. Wow, we could talk with you for like days, man.
Guys, it's like, right? I don't want to leave. Give me some gin.
Thank you so much. I'm Saki, we're out here, man. Podcasting gin. Oh, yeah, by the way, before you go, man, here's some gin for you. There we go. Some gin for you.
Thank you.
And also a pair of shoes from Vaya, who are sponsors today, yeah? This is a pretty local brand.
Making liquor and everything.
Yeah, you know, these kids need nappies and shit.
Thank you.
Yeah? We got to pay school fees and stuff now.
Okay, should I check these out?
Yeah, these are yours.
These are awesome.
Proudly local.
Amazing.
Yeah. You're size 8. Dudu told me you're size 8.
These look, I think I'm a size 7, but these look like, I'm a size 8 in a hockey boot. Will fit.
Yeah, no, if it doesn't fit, let me know and then we'll get you another pair.
Thank you so much.
But thank you, man. We're out of here.
Thanks
podcasting
for having me,
chill. Thank you. Thank you for coming, man. We're out of here. Boom. To advertise, email podcast@thisismechi.com. Release yourself from order and logic and enter a new place. It's not work. It's not home. Here, no maps have been drawn. No books have been written. Nothing is certain. Everything is possible. Welcome to podcast and chill with Matt G. I'm assuming this doesn't end well.